JazakAllah khair for the talk. And I was definitely like feeling what you were saying, but the one thing that I'm a bit worried about is that if we emphasise, like, I definitely think the Muslims need to come together more, but if we emphasise unity too much, we can end up like crossing like certain fundamentals. Like when I became a Muslim, had people like telling me that there's another prophet after the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that Isa alaihi salam is dead. So do you propose there's certain kind of boundaries?
Well, that's what I said, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. You say La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, that automatically dismisses any prophet after Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That automatically dismisses Isa being dead, because the Quran argues against that. So they're basic parameters. I said, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, five prayers, that automatically dismisses the people. We don't have to pray, it's what's in your heart that counts.
Yes.
You know, 2.5% on the zakat, so Hajj in Ramadan and not Hajj in February to Chicago. You know, so, you know, there are basic parameters that govern our unity, most definitely, and those are the agreed upon things that the Muslims share. And when you come with something like Isa's dead and he's not coming back, and you come with there's a prophet after Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, those are not things that the Muslim Ummah has agreed upon for 1400 years. So yeah, definitely. That's why I want to emphasize the unity doesn't mean uniformity on the one hand, and there's a basic, their basic parameters to govern that unity, most definitely.
And we'll take the next question from a sister, inshallah. Does any sisters have a question?
Yeah, I'll say it, maybe I'll. What advice would you give to brothers who are thinking of taking second, third wives just for the simple fact that they are having marital problems?
One dysfunctional family is better than two. So you're not going to solve, you're not going to make your dysfunctional family functional by complicating things even more. And so people should be, and on the other hand, it's good to want to save the world, but if you can save that little piece that Allah has blessed you with, save that. And then as we grow and mature spiritually as a community, then maybe we can progress to the level where we can productively engage in some sort of polygamy. We should have standards too, like, okay, minimally you be with your wife 20 years, let your kids get a good start in life before you even begin to think in that direction, so that not only have you made sure your children have gotten a good start before you introduce a potentially destabilizing element, you've given yourself a chance to grow in Islam, and you've given your marriage a chance to mature and have a lot of stability before you endeavor to do something. You find people that have been married 3 weeks, they meet someone on the bus, and it's like, guess who's coming to dinner? there goes their three-week-old marriage, and then they end up with nobody. Because the first sister say, you know, you bum, get out of here. It's my house after all. And then the new one, I thought we was moving in. Well, I got my car, sister, your car. And then now you left there with your car and no wife. So we have to think through these things and be very mature about it. And also really look at the track record. And if you see like 99.9% of efforts at poor marriages have ended in unmitigated disasters, you know, in all likelihood that's going to be your case until the community grows and matures. And that's a process. So we have to think through these things very carefully and really look at the importance of maintaining stability in our family. And if someone is spiritually mature enough and they really have buy-in from everybody involved, then maybe it could work. So we're not saying that something Allah and His Messenger made lawful, we should make unlawful, but the most important thing is taking care of the business and undertaking the responsibilities that Allah Ta'ala has placed with us right now. That's our wife, our children, our husband, our children, and making sure that's solid and on track and on target before we begin to branch out in other areas. And then empowering, if you're really concerned about the single sisters, then maybe help one of these single brothers who can't afford to get married to get married. Create a fund to give these brothers the resources where they can marry that sister. It's like, but she looked too good to be with that brother. So,
I have a question from a brother who really wants to be here today, but he can't because of some difficulty. And it's something that he was really wanting to get an answer on. How do you discriminate? We're living in a world where, as a new Muslim, there are so much information out there. There's so many people you can listen to and it can draw you in one way or another. How do you know that the source that you have is on the correct path? How do you know that you're not going to be led the wrong way for somebody who's a new Muslim who doesn't know? How do you make
That's
sure?
What we meant. One thing we mentioned earlier, keep your intellect. Don't abandon your common sense. Like 90% of the problems, common sense would sort them out. It's just like, this isn't right. You know, keep your sense of smell. Like, man, I smell a foul odor. You know, so just keep your wits about you, number one. Take a ruling from your heart. Istafti qalbak. And you know, your heart will guide you right, and your heart tells you that something's not wrong. And then, not overwhelming yourself, stick to the basis. Well, Quran and a good translation, explanation of it, one of the most excellent that a lot of people aren't aware of is Yahya Emmerich's Journey Through the Quran. It's a good translation. He worked on it for 10 years, accessible English, and rooted in the primary sources of the religion. Riyad al-Salihin, Gardens of the Righteous, a good guide through the hadith literature that's practical and will give you practical lessons to implement in your life. Just keep with those basic things and keep with the mainstream of aqidah at a fundamental level. Allah Yawm al-Qiyamah is not going to ask us, where is Allah? At that point, we'll know. He's going to not ask us which side of the throne is he sitting on. We're not responsible for that stuff in the dunya. We're responsible to believe in Allah, His angels, the scriptures, the prophets, the last day, and the qadr, khayrihi wa sharri. That's what we're responsible for. And so stick with the basics. Don't complicate things. If you're not a specialist who's working actively to refute the various philosophical attacks on Islam, you don't have to learn ilm al-kalam and all of these things. You're not responsible for that. Imam Ghazali even discouraged it from ordinary people. So a person's racking their brain trying to learn Neoplatonic logic or philosophy or Aristotelian logic so they can understand what Imam Maturidi is saying in this treatise. You're not responsible for that. And then as a result, they become so confused, they have a faith crisis. Like, you came into Islam without any of that, and now trying to sort it all out and work through it, they end up with a faith crisis. A faith is a light that Allah casts into the heart of the believers. And our job is to keep that light burning. And if you're a specialist, then that's far kifaya. You're doing it on behalf of the rest of the Muslims.
I have a question from a sister had to leave early. And she's from Kenya, her and her husband, and there's no way for them to access any Zaytuna literature in Kenya, and they asked if you could look into that to make that available in Kenya.
Inshallah, give us tawfiq to look into that in a practical way, inshallah.
Wa alaykum salam. Explain a little bit about the pirate. Do we need to take pirates to be guided?
Bayah to who?
To a sheikh. There
are different opinions on that. In fact, Imam Shafi'i, rahimahullah, sent that question to all of the leading authorities of his age. And amongst those who responded were Ibn Khaldun and Ibn Abbad al-Rundi. And so this is an issue that people have debated. Some say you do, and some say you don't. If the nature of our times, if you're successfully, you come into Islam and you're successfully establishing a life of righteousness and piety, you're adhering to the basics of the religion, you're a person of good character. There are people, like you said, خِيَارُهُمْ فِي الْجَاهِلِيَةِ خِيَارُهُمْ فِي الْإِسْلَامِ. They're people of good character. They come into Islam and they go downhill. There are people that get involved with some sheikh that's a charlatan, and then their character starts to suffer because of all the... they're a person who's magnanimous and they're generous and their parameters are slowly narrowed. They're a person that greet everyone they meet, which the Prophet tells us to do. Ayyul Islam afdal, Ya Rasulullah, qala sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and tut'im al-ta'am, wa tuqri al-salam, ala man arafta, wa man lam ta'rif. So there are people like that, they're not even Muslim. Everyone to me, hey, how you doing today? I say, how you doing? Hey, little kid, how you doing? It's a lollipop, there you go. Hey, salam alaikum, Mr. Jones, how you doing, Mr. Jones? Hello, Ms. Smith, how you? And then they come into Islam and they think, oh, Muslims, mashallah, salam alaikum, brother, salam alaikum. We don't give salam to those people. Oh, salam alaikum, brother. Oh, those people, we shouldn't give them salam. They're questionable. And so that person's natural inclination that naturally leads them to implement the prophetic sunnah. وَتُقْرِ السَّلَامِ عَلَى مَنْ عَرَفْتَ وَمَنْ لَمْ تَعْرِفْ. You greet people, those you know and don't know, become narrowed by their so-called sheikh. So, you know, it's a big question. Some people say you don't if you're a person of good character, because why are you engaging in suluk? You're trying to reform your character. And if you're mindful of Allah, why do you have the sheikh? To remind you of Allah. And so if you're accomplishing those things alone, that you don't. And some people say you do, that you need someone to guide you and assist you. So it's a debate. At the end of the day, Allah knows best, but if you're doing well, it's not practical. One of the historical realities associated with having a sheikh is you're in the physical presence of that person, and now that's very difficult. And so if you're doing well and you're doing fine and you feel you need someone, ask Allah to send someone to you. And if Allah deems that you need someone, He'll send someone to you if your request is sincere. And if not, keep doing the good things you're doing, trust in Allah, and try to make yourself a strong Muslim. One of the things that we should definitely avoid is negating the tarbiyah of the Prophet. So let's say, we mentioned a mu'min al-qawi khayrun ahabbu ila Allah min al-mu'min al-da'if, that a strong believer is better and more beloved to a weak believer. And one of the things we're taught as a manifestation of a believer's strength is self-reliance. Not in religion, but self-reliance in terms of working out problems, struggling to not be a burden on people. And sometimes not asking a lot of questions. Why? Nahana sallallahu alayhi wa sallam an qila wa qal wa ida'at al-mal an ida'at al-mal wa kathrat al-su'al. He forbade us from hearsay, and he forbade us from squandering wealth, and he forbade us from excessive questioning. One reason for that, the Prophet ﷺ knows he's not going to always be there. Figure it out. Learn how to figure things out yourself. Use your own inclination. And sometimes this tarbiyah with the sheikh is to negate that. You ask the sheikh everything. Like, sheikh, can I blow my nose? It's really running. And so that independence and self-reliance that the Sahaba manifested is sometimes negated. So we should be very careful and look for good. I'm sorry about that.
Dawood?
Shane, yeah, this is the last question, even though it's on me, but we're going to have to go on this.
Is there any questions from the sisters?
Shia, the Twelvers, and are they Muslim? Because again, it's again amongst converts, you got to remember it's a bombardment of right. all this sort of thing. So Twelvers, are Twelvers Muslim?
Shia are Muslims, and the things that would undermine the purity of their Islam are things that have to be assessed on a case-by-case basis. Every Shia, generally speaking, is Shia because they were born in Iran or Iraq or Lebanon or parts of Afghanistan or part of India or Pakistan where Shia predominate.
Yeah.
And so they might not inherently be people that slander and some of the companions of the Prophet. We have Shia friends of our family that don't do any of that, and they're always asking us for clarification about this, that, or the other. And they have gatherings, they invite all the Sunnis in, their friends condemn them sometimes, but they don't care. They're like, I'm Muslim, I was born in Iran, I'm Shi'i, but this is how we understand it, but maybe we're wrong about things. Can you clarify this or that? So you have to take these things on a case-by-case basis, but they follow the Qibla, they say, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. So they're Muslim. They're Muslims. And other than that, you have to sort it out on a case-by-case basis and try to maintain friendly relations with them. And through those relations, inshallah, the issues that they're not clear about, you will open the door for them to gain some clarity. If they do engage in aggressive slanders of the Sahaba, Aisha radiallahu anha, Umar, Abu Bakr radiallahu anhum, Uthman especially, then one should avoid them and warn them that they're going against the Quran. One of the fundamental principles in the Quran is love for those who the Prophet loved. The Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, he married two of his daughters to Uthman radiallahu anhu, and said if he had a third, he would have given her to him. You know, and so these things are, they came about in an ex post facto sense. An event happened, then a doctrine was created to justify and explain that event. That's not how religion, the revelation comes, and then history unfolds after that. So we should be mindful of certain things, but our hearts should be open, and we should try to be understanding and be guides. And sure. Hidayah, you know what Hidayah means? You know what Huda? Ihdina as-sirata al-mustaqim. Huda means ad-dilalatu bil-lutf, to indicate things with gentleness. And so we should try to be gentle and understanding and move on that basis. Yes, sir.
What advice would you give sort of, say, you know, like you've been in the deen for quite a bit, but you've these other people that have become Muslim, what advice would you give for us to give them the things that should be doing in the first sort of year, 6 months?
Number one, to always remind a new Muslim that it's a marathon, not a sprint. So don't burn yourself out in the first 6 months. Trying to do everything. I gotta learn this, I gotta do that, I gotta do this, I gotta wear niqab, I gotta wear, and they end up burning out. So just remind them it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's a long race. As you go, there's gonna be sunny days, a sunny patch where you make good time in the marathon, or bad time because you're sweating and it's hot, and then the clouds come out, little drizzle comes, you make good time because you're not sweating, you don't have to grab the water bottles, and there are going to be uphills where you don't think you'll ever get to the top, then it's going to be downhill where it's easy. There are going to be curves, there are going to be straightaways. That it's a long race, and just get a good pace, a good comfortable pace. Don't overwhelm yourself. Inshallah, you'll learn by through consistency, not by bombarding yourself. You learned an Arabic word a day, and in 3 or 4 years you have the working vocabulary of the Arabic language. So it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's the advice I would give. Don't try to overwhelm yourself. No one enters into this religion with severity except that severity overwhelms them.
Is it a very quick question?
It's a quick question to ask. Okay, basically, as new Muslims, one of the challenges that we have is a family. Maybe you're from Christian, Catholic, all sorts of different things. What sort of advice would you give to us that we can give that dawah? You know, we all want our parents to become Muslims. What practical advice would you give?
Honor your parents, even though they're not Muslims. They still have the right of, over you. And show the people the virtue of Islam through your character, because they don't want to hear your words at first. As far as they're concerned, you join the cult of the suicide bombers, and you know, they start looking at you funny when you're wearing baggy clothes around them. Like, so they don't want to hear your words. Show them through your character. Show them Islam made me a better person. And so, you knew who I was before Islam. You knew what I was doing. Look, I don't drink anymore. I don't smoke anymore. I don't use drugs anymore. I don't sell drugs anymore. I don't, you know, I'm not fornicating anymore. I'm not trying to rob you and rip you off anymore. You can leave your wallet out in my presence and turn your back. And so people see those things, and that eventually, even if they have a dislike towards Islam based on the misinformation they've been exposed to, your character will impress itself on them, because people aren't stupid. They know when something's for real.
And actions speak louder than words.
Actions speak louder than words. Nah. So show them through your actions the virtue of Islam, and eventually they'll be won over. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت استغفرك واتوب اليك اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما وعملا متقبلا خالصا لوجهك الكريم اللهم تقبل منا زدنا ولا تنقصنا اللهم بارك وارحم هذه الجماعه الطيبه اللهم بارك لنا فيما بقي من شعبان وبلغنا جميعا شهر رمضان انت مولانا فانصرنا على القوم الكافرين سبحان ربك رب العزه عما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين.